The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Well, hello. This is Fred Brack from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, as it always is, for at least 10 years, serving the community since 1974. Want to talk to them about insurance or thank them for underwriting our reading? 919-781-1973. And now it's time to open the cover to a brand new issue of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. This one for April 2019. We have a guitar on the cover, and the cover theme is the ultimate Merlefest experience, plus 15 can't-miss spring festivals. Now, I can't promise we're going to get to all 15 of them, but maybe we'll get to one or two or three or four of them. We'll see. And we've got various other subjects in here that I hope you will find interesting. But we must start, as we always do, with the Welcome to Our State by Elizabeth Hudson, Editor-in-Chief. Driving back from Asheville on one of those robin's egg blue sky spring days and not quite ready to go home, I called an old friend in Asheboro who told me to detour down to her house. She had a convertible, a little white VW cabriolet. They don't make them anymore. And when I got there, she'd already folded the top down and was waiting for me to hop in. Angela and I have been doing this for more than 30 years since high school. Riding the back roads, we called it back then. Going nowhere in particular, just going. Piling into friends' Mustangs, Firebirds, Transams, and Camaros. I got in the car and we set off on our old route, heading down Highway 42. Does anyone actually say highway? No, roads here are just 42, 220, 64, Old 49. Past the mall and the old Jones skating rink, where we hung out years ago, before we finally got real wheels, and we drove, the town fell away, and the landscape widened, old wooden fences leaning along the side of the road, mailboxes set in gravel by long driveways, long abandoned tobacco barns, seems like they don't make those anymore either. Caving in at the sides, cows grazing in pastures, no stoplights to interrupt our ride. For the next few hours, she and I just meandered, drifting along those curving country roads, our conversation familiar and easy too, after all these years, the way it is with a friend who knows you well. We drove out by the zoo. My first job was at the zoo 30 years ago. Of all things, I drove a tram. And eventually, we hit 705, the Pottery Highway, to Seagrove. I love this route. It was designated a North Carolina Scenic Byway in the spring of 1990, one of the first of 51 roads in the state to be recognized for all its rural beauty and cultural significance. As we passed by the colorfully painted wooden signs nailed to trees for Kegel Road Pottery, McCandless, Old Hard Times, Angela and I fell silent. The radio turned off, lulled by the sun on our shoulders and the pleasure of driving these bucolic roads. For so long, this part of Randolph County was, for me, the hub from which everything radiated. I learned to drive on these roads, gripping the steering wheel when the driver's ed teacher, who was also the girls' basketball coach, would open the passenger door to spit out his tobacco juice. I burned up these roads, driving back and forth to friends' houses in Farmer and Back Creek. I eased my car down many dirt roads in pursuit of some weekend field party or bonfire, entertainment in another era before Netflix kept us all home on Saturday nights. We looped around at 220 past Pinewood Country Club, where I rode with my grandparents to the pool every summer, and past Henry James Barbecue, where I'd stop for dinner after night classes at Randolph Community College, never dreaming that one day I'd be lucky enough to travel all over this state, logging miles for every town in North Carolina. I'm grateful for all those journeys, but on days like this, in a car with an old friend, I'm happy to retrace familiar paths from home, the well-traveled ones that I carry with me wherever I go. And now it is time to have me interpret the monthly pictorial or photo essay. This month it's called Bloom Where You're Planted. Behind every locally grown blossom is the hard work and careful planning of a flower farmer with a deep connection to their land. This month we walk among rows of dazzling flowers, breathing in the sweet scent of spring in North Carolina. Beautiful double spread here. Family walking through flower field. Katie Greer, Mike Adams, and their son Garnett are carrying on the legacy of generations of family farmers in the big sandy mush valley near Leicester. Together, they've turned a former tobacco farm into the storybook beautiful Lady Luck flower farm. This is one of those dreamy sort of pictures. I don't quite know how the photographer does it. I guess there's a little morning fog in the air, and the yellow from the fields is casting a yellowish tint in the fog that's surrounding a broken down old farmhouse in the background and a hill that rises behind. Dad has a flower in his hand, looking back at the son, who's investigating one of the flowers, and Mum's following up with a bouquet. This is written by Katie St. Singh. Lady Luck, Leicester. Something clicked for Katie Greer when she attended herbal medicine school in Weaverville. She'd grown up in nearby Asheville, where her father taught her to love and appreciate nature. Classroom hikes and explorations deepened that passion. Now on 10 rolling acres of their farm in the big sandy mush valley, Katie and her husband, Mike Adams, grow a wide variety of flowers, including dahlias, tulips, and peonies, with a special emphasis on beautiful plants that also provide food or medicine, like lavender and echinacea. We're big believers in being in nature, and nature's ability to soothe and heal, Katie says. Bringing people to the farm and into nature is the most fun aspect. Following that philosophy, Mike and Katie host workshops, farm dinners, and several community picking days throughout the season. Couples can also book private pickings and choose their own flowers in the days before their wedding. The farm is a whole organism, Mike says. It all works together. Now I'm going to be hard-pressed to identify the flower types for you, but on the left we have a hand reaching into a beautiful planting. It's got some deep crimson flowers and some pink flowers tipped in white, and then a white flower with a little bit of purple in the center. I'm afraid I can't identify them, and the our state people didn't find it necessary to identify the type of flower for me. But here's the family, husband and wife, hand in hand, little boy hugging himself. Katie's got a whole array of small blossomed but various types of flowers in her hand to bring inside for the evening. Overleaf, another beautiful picture. His caption down here says, like Katie, Mike has a passion for plants. He once interned with a ginseng grower in Madison County and used to own a landscaping business. Together, they're raising 5-year-old Garnett to appreciate nature, too. He loves to get dirty. He takes great delight in plowing the rows, Mike says. That's another joy, getting to see him grow up in this place. And the family, having just been photographed on the previous page and now is now walking up a path which has tractor paths in it. That is, it's sort of grassy, but you can see where the tractor wheels come in there off of a little bit of a path further up. And it looks like Garnet is avoiding stepping in the muddy section of the road. Thank you, Garnet. There's an old farm building on the left, and the ivy is growing all the way up to the roof line. Mike and Katie recently started hosting weddings on the farm, which feels just right for Lady Luck. I love these celebrations, Katie says, and it does feel like an honor to the land. And this is a close-up of some pink blossom flowers. These are flowers that are at the end of a long stalk, like a foot long above any greenery. And there's a big solid ball, kind of like a like you get on a peony, and then it puffs open when it's ready with a purple blossom. Fern Rock Farm in Hillsboro. At the entrance to Bill Brown and Carrie McCann's property stands the giant boulder, draped in resurrection fern that gives their farm its name. From there, the driveway slopes gently toward Bill and Carrie's home, past a pond and rows of raised beds filled with classic southern flowers, larkspur and daffodils, sunflowers and gladioli, and hundreds of dahlias, Carrie's favorite for their wide variety of shapes and colors. At the state fair last year, her dahlias won 15 blue ribbons. The couple didn't plan to become flower farmers. Growing up, Carrie watched her father tend beans, corn, and peas in the family's Greensboro backyard. For years, she planted flowers simply because she liked them. After she and Bill retired a decade ago, they literally grew more and more until they decided, let's sell them. Neither had a background in farming, but they figured it out together. Carrie's had no training in this. She's learned from all the mistakes we've made, Bill said. She's a pretty smart cookie. I'm proud of that. And there they are. They're, I'm going to use the term elderly couple, although it's beginning to bother my wife and I, those particular words. But they're an elderly, white-haired couple standing in the flowers, which are coming up chest high in front of them. And there's a close-up of one of the no-doubt dahlia, since we've been talking about them. Carrie started growing and arranging flowers for weddings when a neighbor's daughter got married. She sells flowers to customers at the Carborough Farmers Market and to florists and event planners through Piedmont Wholesale Flowers. All of us want people to buy more local flowers, she says. There's room for them all to be sold. Fernrock's last residents must have loved flowers, too. Bill and Carrie found the century-old stone foundation of a house surrounded by daffodils that continue to bloom. And here's a picture shot from the back of Carrie watering her plants, which are really kind of growing wild. This is not a neatly organized garden. These things are big, and some of them are taller than she is. And on the left is a close-up of some. It says, neighbors know that Fernrock's farm stand operates on an honor system. Take a bunch of zinnies or daisies, push a few dollars through the slot marked cash. Turns out, those neighbors have a hand in growing the flowers, too. The town of Hillsboro drops off truckloads of leaves from around the community, which Bill adds to the soil as mulch. Fishing Creek, Whitaker's. It's quiet out on Michael and Daphne O'Brien's farm in Edgecombe County, land that's been in Michael's family for 8 generations now. Years ago, when the couple lived and worked in Raleigh, they'd visit Michael's grandparents at the family's 1826 farmhouse most weekends. All my life, I've loved this place, Michael says, and I always wanted to come live here. 25 years ago, they did. His grandfather farmed traditional row crops, corn, peanuts, soybeans, cotton, and tobacco. Never cut flowers, though he always had a vegetable garden with several rows of flowers for his wife, who loved them. But the first time that the O'Briens brought mason jars filled with zinnias to the farmer's market, they saw that the demand for flowers was strong. On Saturdays at the Rocky Mount Farmer's Market, their signature offering is Daphne's Make Me One, mixed bouquets of sunflowers, tulips, irises, whatever's blooming at the time. Named for the eager responses to the email newsletter that Michael sends out each week. Make Me One! So this is a pretty blue pitcher with a handle. It's flecked with white, and you can see the flowers that they mention here. I'm trying to get the names right here. It says sunflowers, tulips, and irises. These look like miniature sunflowers to me. I don't see any tulips or irises in the bunch, or maybe they're black-eyed Susans. I'm not really sure. But they're very yellow with a dark center, which looks like it could be the base for some seeds. And then there's some red flowers behind that and some white ones up at the top. And they are very much a make-me-one-too type of flower arrangement. Here they are in their garden, which is divided into rows and is lower than the previous article's rows of plants. It says, flower farming is hard work between heat and harsh winters, weeds and animal intruders. But for a former professional photographer like Michael, being surrounded by so much color and beauty under a wide blue sky is irresistible. I'm out here every day, he says. So I see every rainbow. I see every sunset. It's very fulfilling. It's fun to drive a tractor, no doubt about it, Michael says. The smell of the diesel and the dirt, it's an experience. A modified tobacco transplanter allows the O'Briens to put 12 to 1,500 plants in the ground in each hour. The machine opens and closes the dirt like a zipper. In between, Daphne drops in zinnia seedlings that started life in a greenhouse. We're mom and pop. But we're mechanized, Michael says. Now, she's holding one of these seedlings in her hand for this photo. It's a pyramid shape at the bottom, like a tall pyramid upside down, which is where the roots are. So it's about a 2-inch long and 1-inch square at the top, but it comes to a point at the bottom. And the plant itself is about 4 or 5 inches long. And in this tractor, as Michael operates it, his wife is looking at the planters that these were grown in. And they hold, 6 by about 12, so maybe let's say 75 or so of these. What they do is they tip them up sideways so the plants are like spilling out, and she plucks them out one by one and drops them into this little funnel on the machine, and it takes it down to the ground and drops them in one by one in the furrows that are being made by the machine going through. Terracea. Now, that's an area that I am familiar with. It's in Pantego, which is right near Belhaven, very near Belhaven, the next town to Belhaven, where I have a condo. Flowers have been a Van Staldenunen tradition for generations, and that's who I expected the name I expected to find. I know they have many, 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 many acres up there. First in the Netherlands, and then after the family relocated during World War II in North Carolina. Beaufort County held great promise for Leendert and Cornelia Van Staldenunen. The combination of soil and climate was perfect for Easter blooming tulips, and there was already a Dutch settlement, Terracea. In 1943, Leendert bought some land and got to work. Most of his tulips and gladioli headed north, loaded into ice-cooled train cars bound for Boston, New York, and Washington, D.C. In 1950, he got an idea. bulbs were arriving by the trainload from the Netherlands. Why not sell those too? His bulb catalog started small, just an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, but later, while recovering from a farming accident, he had time to build his mail order business. I almost said email order. His mail order business. Three of his grandsons, Casey, Carl, and Mark, and Mark's the one I know, continue to sell cannas, daylilies, amaryllis, and other bulbs and root plants, fulfilling the promise of the farm's name, Heavenly Earth. And we see some peonies over here. And there's some feet and some jeans and a hand reaching down, getting ready to cut a peony off of its stalk, I believe. If you spot peonies in early spring at Whole Foods locations on the East Coast, chances are they came from Pantego flower growers. The grocery chain is Terracea's biggest customer. Many of the peonies are harvested as buds, time to blossom when they reach retailers. When Mark Van Staaldunen, shown here with the left, and his brothers took over Terracea in the 90s. He oversaw acres of grain on the farm. After Mark opened Spoon River Restaurant in Bellhaven, the brothers decided to let go of the grain operation. But lush peonies from Terracea have become a signature of Spoon River's dining room. And for those of you who may remember any previous articles about Spoon River, it's been closed for months since the storm flooded out the kitchen and everything in there, and they're working madly to get it open by the end of March. There's beautiful pictures of the peonies here, tight buds, open buds, and a peony on somebody's hat. Terracea, the peonies started with lean dirt. As he established his farm in Pantego, he experimented with planting new kinds of flowers for his customers. Over the years, as the mail order side of the business grew, the cut flower side diminished, but Carl and his brothers wanted at least one crop that was sure to be profitable. They understood that peonies, hard to grow and highly nostalgic, held a certain magic for many people. As a result, Lindert's 5 acres of peonies have turned into 150 acres, a process that has taken time and patience. Like fruit trees, peonies take years to establish a root system that will support their heavy blooms. Plus, Carl says, you can't fake winter. Where other flowers are happy to bask in the warmth of a greenhouse, peonies require a spell of cold weather, so they're only available for a few months out of the year. There's something special when you see them, Carl says, especially the first of the season. People will say, my grandmother had these flowers in her garden and they're entranced by them, Carl says. It's a hard plant to miss when it blooms. Peony plants take up to 5 years to establish a root system, but their showy, fragrant blooms are so worth the wait. And they've been known to live for 100 years or more. So the peonies your grandma once tended are a gift that keeps giving, spring after spring. And here is a double spread of a bouquet of pink and white peonies, and it's just gorgeous. I grow them myself, very informally, in the front yard here in Raleigh, and I love to pick them and float them in a bowl of water. They're so heavy, you have to have a strong vase to put them in. The heads are gigantic, about 6 inches. And that, my friends, is the last of our pictorial pictures. And we have time for just a few more items. Maybe we should do a little bit of the quiz that's always at the front of our state magazine. And, of course, I always have to look up the answers because I generally don't know what they are. There are often things that were, if you might know if you were brought up around here, which I was not. This quiz is called Big and Tall, with branches that reach high above the forest floor and trunks too wide to wrap your arms around. These trees are our champions, written by Alan Hodge. The North Carolina Champion Big Tree Program, part of the North Carolina Forest Service, keeps a database of champion trees organized by species and county. The tallest champion tree in North Carolina is what type of pine, standing 180 feet tall in Jackson County? Black, red, or eastern white? And it would be eastern white. There are currently nearly 400 champion trees registered by the North Carolina Forest Service. What western county has more of these trees, around 60, than anywhere else in the state? Stanley, Buncombe, or Rockingham? And the answer would be Buncombe. Our top champion tree in terms of canopy size has branches that spread 126 feet. This majestic specimen is a willow oak located in what Sampson County town? Goldsboro, Roseboro, or Washington? And the answer is Roseboro. I'm just pausing here because I didn't know there was a Washington in Sampson County, since there's a Washington down in Beaufort County or Pamlico, not Pamlico County. It's out near the coast, and it's not in Washington County. So I'm confused. But anyway, Bertie County has a yellow poplar near Powellsville that stands 146 feet tall with a circumference of 260 inches. The yellow poplar also goes by what name? The tulip tree, the sweet gum, or the yellow branch? And the answer is the tulip tree. Trunk circumference is generally measured in inches at a point about 4.5 feet above the ground. The champion tree with the largest circumference in our state is a 468-inch bald cypress on Conahoe Creek near Williamston in what county? Martin, Warren, or Edgecombe? And the answer is, it is in Martin County. North Carolina no longer accepts new non-native species on the champion tree list, but some have been grandfathered in, including an ailanthus, also known as a tree of heaven. This 92-foot-tall specimen is located in Hillsboro in what county? You have Wake, Durham, or Orange County, and that would be Orange County. The God's Acre Cemetery in Winston-Salem is the site of a champion Gingko Biloba tree, The Gingko is native to China, but this particular example is located in what historic district? West End, Old Salem, or Uptown? And the answer is Old Salem. Fraser firs form the backbone of our state's Christmas tree industry. A 100-foot-tall fir can be found on the grounds of High Hampton Resort in what Jackson County town? Cashiers, Brasstown, or Balsam? The answer is Cashiers. And the final quiz question. The common persimmon produces what is often called the fruit of the gods. Our state's champion with the greatest circumference is located in the town of South Mills in what state park? Pettigrew, Dismal Swamp, or Lake Waccamaw? The answer is the Dismal Swamp. Marley Drug at marleydrug.com would like you to put the wind back in your sail, says this advertisement on the next page. You can call them at 800-924-0704 to find out what drug will put the wind in your sail. Small surpluses, or surprises rather, for craft beer lovers. Get off the beaten path for an authentic craft brewed experience in Alamance County. Discover everything our area offers at visitalamance.com. You can call them if you prefer, 800-637-3804. That's Burlington, Mevin, Elon, Graham, and Sexapaha, if you would like to know more about Alamance County. Well, that's about all the time we have for today's episode of Our State Magazine. Hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I am Fred Brack, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, triangleradingservice.org. Comments, questions? Call us at the studios, 919-832-5138. So long until next time.